Penguin Random House Audio presents Trust Her, a novel by Flynn Berry, read for you by Catherine Lee McEwen. For Ronan and Declan. "We must go as quietly as we can," said Mr. Tumnus. "The whole wood is full of her spies. Even some of the trees are on her side. C.S. Lewis, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe." This is a work of fiction, set in an imagined, near-future Ireland. Part 1. Trouble. 1. The wheat is almost tall enough to hide inside. Past the road, golden fields ripple toward the horizon, catching the sun. A heatwave began in Dublin earlier this week. I can see a band of haze in the distance, a storm front coming in from far over the West Country. Along the Atlantic coast, the sea will be surging, rain pounding the backs of the waves, fog rising from the water to cloak the headlands. But here, the air is hot and close. This morning, every single person walking past me in my neighbourhood looked sticky, their skin, their clothes. I'm escaping the city's blistering streets for a swim. Normally I'd swim at the 40-foot, but during a heatwave, most of Dublin will have the same idea. All of the swimming rocks, the 40-foot, Howth Head, the Vico Baths, will be jammed, and instead, I'm trying a place my sister told me about months ago. Arts Lock is in the Wicklow countryside, near Ballinasgay. Marion told me the lock is balanced on a hilltop, the water running down through the gorse bushes and boulders at its edge, like an infinity pool. She said you can swim around the boulders, diving between them through the cold, clear water. I could be spending the free weekend getting ahead on work. I'm a sub-editor at the Irish Observer, but our work is slower in August, with Parliament out of session. Fewer breaking news stories, fewer reporters filing late copy. I check the pulsing dot on the map, then turn onto a road through more wheat fields. I can see Finn's empty car seat in the rear mirror. It's strange not to have him here with me, staring out the window, asking me questions. Today his father is bringing him to Donegal for a holiday. They must be somewhere near Kells by now. Finn always falls asleep on long drives, and I picture him with his eyes closed, sunshine flooding over his face. He'll be home on Friday. 5 days to go. With Finn away this week, I'll have some spare time for all the things I moan about being too busy to do. An exhibit at the Hugh Lane Gallery, dinner at the Winding Stair, a browse of the bookshelves in Hodges Figgis. The prospect should have me giddy, but instead I only feel restless. Wise up, I tell myself. It's only 5 days. I roll the car to a stop at a crossing. With the windows down, I can hear the drilling sound of crickets. I forgot to tell Tom about the bottom strap of Finn's life vest, the one that hooks under his legs. Maybe I should text Tom, I think, and I'm reaching for my phone when something crashes into me. My hands fly back to grip the steering wheel as the car lurches forward, the metal screeching around me. The sound grows louder, then my head whips back against the seat. The car has come to a stop, shoved halfway into the crossing. I climb out, shaking. Behind me, the driver of a black Range Rover is stepping onto the road and apologising in a polished South Dublin accent, holding his hands up toward me. "Are you hurt?" he asks. "What were you thinking?" I say, distantly aware that I haven't actually checked if I am hurt. I tilt my neck, testing it, and feel a deep spasm of pain. My legs haven't stopped shaking. Finn could have been in the car during the collision.
I am so sorry, says the driver. I only looked away from the road for a second.
I stand with my hands on my hips, looking at my car. The back of it is crumpled in like paper, and I hear myself groan. This will take ages to sort out. The driver says,
Here, let me give you my insurance card.
Behind him, heat shimmers above the tarmac, the mirage making the road look wet. He is reaching for his wallet when I catch a movement inside his car. A pale blur of a face behind the windscreen. Someone else is with him. And fear drops over me. We are alone, I realize. On a road surrounded by wheat fields. Sweat prickles down my back. Around the crossing, the wheat shifts in the wind. Dozens of paths across the field appearing and collapsing.
I'll give you my insurance too, I say,
and turn back toward the car, forcing myself to walk normally. I can't let on that anything's wrong. He can't see. In the hot air, the sound of the crickets rises, ringing like an alarm. My heart thumps, sending out sheets of blood. The driver waits a few paces down the road. Ahead of me, my car door is hanging open, and I'm nearly there when I hear movement at my back. I run the last few steps and throw myself into the seat, scrabbling for the keys. The man is already alongside the back windows. I shove the key into the ignition and stamp my foot down on the pedal. The engine starts spinning, but the car won't move. Something must be broken from the collision. I push my foot down again and again as a shadow falls over my lap. The man is outside my door, standing over me. I left the car in park, I realize, and shove at the gear stick. The man's hands reach through my open window and his fingers dig into my arms, trying to drag me onto the road. Almost there, the gears are about to release. And then he wrenches me out. The tarmac scrapes my bare knees. He punches me in the mouth and pain splits open my bottom lip. Blood sprays onto the road, onto my dress, onto him. I fight him off, panting. If I can break away from him and run into the field, the wheat will close behind me, hiding me from view. I'm already close enough that the stalks are whipping against my bare arms as we fight. The field is right behind me. I can feel it happening. I can feel the wheat rushing past my face as I run. But then the tarmac is rearing up, and I'm flat on my stomach while he kneels on my back, closing a zip tie around my wrists. The other man is here too now, saying, Jesus, hurry up, and taking my other side as they drag me toward their car. I can't scream. I keep trying, but no sound comes out. They shove me into the back seat, behind tinted windows. I sit upright, with my wrists bound behind me and blood spilling down my chin, as the driver takes off down the road, veering around my dented car. My heart keeps pounding, fit to burst, like my body hasn't copped on that the fight is over. I force myself to breathe and cough on the blood in my mouth. Tiny drops spray onto the seat in front of me, too small to see. Good, I think. That will be evidence. That will be one way to prove what happened. I hear another car behind us. Maybe I can signal the driver, I think. But when I turn around, I only see my own car following us. Someone is driving it away from the scene. The younger man reaches back from the front seat, twisting me aside and pressing my finger to my phone to unlock it.
What are you doing?
I ask. Without answering, he drops back into the front seat. I hear him typing, then the swish of a message being sent, and another. He is texting my mother, I think, and my sister, so they won't think anything is wrong, so no one will look for me. He must have snatched the phone from my car. I could have made it in time.
I could have closed the door and hit the automatic locks first, then re-
Sample complete. Ready to continue?